Torre before me. Except it's not the sight of him that makes my heart stop in its tracks. It's the man standing beside him. And though I keep silent, my lips mouth the question anyway. Ronaldo?
Chapter 24, The Phantom, September 22nd, 1944. She shouldn't be here. Angelo's too busy grabbing Genevieve's gloved hand and placing a gentle kiss atop to notice my pointed glare. However, she takes a second too long to drag her thunderstruck gaze away from me before smoothing her expression into a soft smile. It seems my friend forgot to mention a key detail about inviting the Salvatore's new accountant. I was there when John took the oath of Omerta, yet it didn't cross my mind that Angelo would invite him to tonight's festivities. More still, I recognize that dress. It belongs to Angelo's sister, Lillian, though I can't deny how ravishing it looks on Genevieve. As if the seamstress stitched it just for her. If I wasn't too busy panicking that she's in a very dangerous domain, I'd steal her away and fuck her in it, only to rip it from her body with my teeth. John's detective friend, Frank Williams, stands on the other side of her, and he boldly glowers at Angelo for his flirtatious ways.
Genevieve, Frank, this is Angelo Salvatore and his good friend Ronaldo,
John introduces, motioning toward the two of us respectively. I meet his stare, but he quickly looks away. Whenever he's in my presence, I know he can feel my hatred for him rolling off me, and I make no effort to hide it. The only reason he still breathes is because I'm deeply in love with his wife. I hold out my left hand, palm up. She hesitates for a fraction of a second before grabbing hold of it. Holding her stare, I slowly place a kiss over her knuckles, enjoying the way she works to swallow. In those few short seconds, the world around us blurs, and the music fades into white noise, leaving just the two of us alone. At that moment, it's only her and me. No mob boss, no husband, no witnesses to our sinful love affair. Then I release her, and our surroundings come rushing back. She quickly tucks her hands to her sides, taking what seems to be her first breath since she first laid eyes on me. Frank turns his burning stare in my direction, his upper lip threatening to curl. The man hates me, and the feeling is mutual. I shoot him a wink, provoking him. I'd love nothing more than for him to flip a wig. It would provide me with the perfect excuse to pop him. The man is as corrupt as a detective can get, and is also the one responsible for getting John into his bad gambling habit to begin with, a point of contention between him and Angelo as of late. Frank insists he didn't know John would get so bad, yet he kept bringing him back to the tables anyway, knowing that his best friend was digging himself deeper and deeper in the hole. Frank knows what happens to men who owe Angelo money and can't pay up, especially because he's the one solving their cases after they're whacked. Something that never quite made sense to me. Why would Frank push his best friend into the line of Angelo's gun? The question has burned me up inside since the moment Frank discovered John was a made man. He appeared disappointed by that news, and had even picked a fight with Angelo about it, claiming John wasn't to be trusted to handle the Salvatore's money and that he'd put the entire operation at risk. A declaration that had Angelo questioning my advice, which had my trigger finger twitching. Luckily, John is an ace and has done the opposite of Frank's claims. Already, he's introduced a more streamlined method of laundering Angelo's money through the multiple businesses he owns. Not only has he cut down on time to clean the money, but he's also increased Angelo's profits.
I trust the three of you will join in on the festivities?
Angelo prompts. Frank rips his stare away, only for it to land on Genevieve instead. He watches her closely as she eagerly engages with Angelo in conversation. As I've said before, she's a charming woman. She falls into a relaxed candor, complimenting Angelo on his beautiful home, and even asking him about the artist who painted the scene on the foyer's ceiling. She's a natural, and without even realizing it, she holds all four of our attentions with ease, all of us completely beholden to her.
My husband is aware of my eclectic taste in decor. Much to my mother's dismay, I loved reading Edgar Allan Poe as a girl.
She explains, a light laugh tinkling from her throat as she affectionately squeezes John's arm. It takes effort not to pull her toward me, then fire a bullet off in the man's skull. He doesn't deserve Genevieve's hanging on his arm as if she's a prize he won. He doesn't deserve her at all.
I fear my love for all things gothic never went away, and I made myself a bit of an outcast.
Oh, gobbledygook.
Angelo bellows loudly, waving a dismissive hand and howling theatrically. I shoot him a quizzical look, tempted to laugh. I don't think I've ever heard him use the term gobbledygook, and it sounds ridiculous coming out of his mouth.
I'm afraid it's true,
Genevieve insists, wearing a bright smile and lighting up the entire damn room.
I tell ya, some of the women think John here is Count Dracula. I'm ashamed to confess that I may have confirmed he was when I overheard them gossiping about it, and well...
She stares up at John sheepishly, and he smiles down at her, deepening my annoyance.
Now they think Seattle is being terrorized by vampires. Little do they know, I loved Mary Shelley growing up, so he's more like Frankenstein's monster.
Is he? I drawl lazily, attracting her reluctant gaze. She's tried her best to avoid my burning stare since I kissed her hand. Your monster? Her smile slips for the briefest of seconds, then she clears her throat, recuperating quickly.
He certainly has the head shape for it, don't you think?
John shoots her a chagrined look, and another obnoxious roar booms from Angelo's throat. While I've seen him finish a few glasses of whiskey already, he's certainly not sauced. If I allow him to keep it up, he's going to attract his wife's attention, and Carmela is a sharp-tongued viper. She also has a history of pointing a gun at a bird or two, convinced they had lain with her husband. Truthfully, they probably had, but Angelo is skilled at lying through his teeth. John, Genevieve, Frank, I address, pulling their attention away from the conversation. I'm afraid Angelo and I have some business to attend to and a few other guests to entertain. But please, enjoy the party and indulge in as many refreshments as you like. I grab hold of Angelo's arm and damn near drag him away. You trying to get that woman iced? I growl beneath my breath, releasing his arm quickly.
Oh, come on. Carmela is too preoccupied with the gossip and champagne to notice,
Angelo defends.
My two sons are leaving me tomorrow to head back overseas. I'm only drowning my sorrows. Do you know how hard it was to convince Congressman Caserta to pull some strings so they could come home for a week? The only reason he allowed it was because I nearly lost my life at his son's restaurant, a place that guaranteed my safety.
He's rambling, and I know it's because he truly is heartbroken to see his sons leave. The worst part is not knowing if they'll come home again. Well, no reason to make it worse by enraging your very possessive wife, I remind. He sighs.
You're right. Though I'm a little annoyed you prevented Polly from stealing that woman away, I dare say she would have been a delight to have around.
She wouldn't have survived long with the way you're acting, I mutter. He chuckles.
I can understand why you've taken a liking to her, Ronnie. Just don't cause trouble with John. I'd hate to have to punish you for sabotaging my favorite accountant.
I say nothing, and instead direct him to another guest. He's swept away by a conversation, while I stew. It takes a matter of moments to find Genevieve on the dance floor, John's arms wrapped around her. He wears a large smile, content knowing that Genevieve belongs to him. And while he may never be wise to who she actually belongs to, I think my girl could use a reminder.
He pulls me around before pulling me back into his arms, and it takes effort not to send my palm flying into his face. I would never, in a public setting, which is the only thing saving his cheek from blossoming into a tomato red shade. The second Angelo and Ronaldo left, he rushed me off to dance, sensing the fury radiating from my pores. They were going to kill you for Richard's mistake? I ask incredulously, the second our chests press together again. I attempt to keep a smile firmly pasted on my face, though the words come out through gritted teeth.
He was my employee, so they considered it my problem, too. The Salvatores had a damn gun to my head.
He hisses beneath his breath.
The only thing that kept them from shooting me was Ronaldo.
Surprise thunders through me, and it takes me a moment to find my voice again. Why?
I don't know. Truthfully, Ronaldo insisted I have the opportunity to correct Richard's mistake. I was left with little choice, so I did, and Angelo was thoroughly impressed.
There's smugness in his tone, and it makes me want to smack him all over again. Even if Richard is a real employee, he'd likely be dead if he crossed the Salvatores, and yet my husband beams with pride.
I helped them one time. I swear to you, Gigi. Angelo's sons are returning to war tomorrow, so they're celebrating their last day. To show his gratitude, Angelo invited me. That's all.
I glance away, focusing on the blurred background as we twirl around the dance floor. I can't explain it, but something about his explanation doesn't settle right and creates a dreadful feeling in the pit of my stomach, almost as if he's lying to me.
Please tell me this won't ruin us, Gigi.
He begs. You're involved in something incredibly dangerous, John. Have you not thought about the implications of this? What if something happens to our daughter?
Nothing will ever happen to Sarah or you. I promise you that.
I don't believe him. Truly, I don't. If John couldn't even save his own life, how could he save ours?
I didn't have a choice, Gigi, but I'm not involved with them anymore. We only came to show respect.
How am I supposed to believe that, Jonathan? It feels like all you've done is lie to me or keep secrets. You helped them once, impressed the goddamn godfather of Seattle, and expect to walk away from it? I don't believe that for a second. I didn't mean to get so heated, but by the time I'm finished, I'm outright glaring at him, the smile long gone from my face. His upper lip curls into a snarl.
I'm the victim here, Gigi. Why can't you see that?
Then why does it feel like Sarah and I are the ones suffering? The song ends a moment later. Delicately, I remove myself from his hold, hating the way his proximity feels. I'm going to take a powder, I mutter, needing to get away from him as desperately as I need to breathe. He lets me go, likely not wanting to raise attention, and for once I'm thankful we're in a public setting. After a butler points me toward the powder room, I briskly head there, offering smiles to strangers as I pass by, injecting every bit of delight into my face. But the second I close the door and lock myself in, my mask breaks apart like a beaten piñata. I lean heavily against the door, inhaling deeply, only to release the breath as a staccato exhale. It feels as if the edge of a razor scraped against every one of my nerves. Then there's a quiet knock on the door, scaring the absolute hell out of me. A yelp slips from my throat, and then I groan, instantly annoyed. Why did he follow me? Can't he give me just a few minutes before I'm forced to put on a happy face for him again? I swing open the door, prepared to tell John to give me 5 more minutes, but I'm being ushered backward before I can get a word out. Rinaldo stands before me and hurriedly locks the door behind him. It takes several seconds for my brain to catch up. Once it does, I'm swinging a hand into his chest. He winces, but doesn't stop me from stepping up into his face. "You work for Angelo Salvatore?" I hiss, glowering up at the behemoth of a man. My heels offer me a few extra inches of dignity, but he still towers over me. It's not lost on me that I'm having the same conversation with 2 different men in the span of a couple minutes.
"I do,"
he answers simply. "What are you, his hitman or something?" Amusement floods his stare, and one corner of his lips twitch. Once more, I'm tempted to smack him.
"I'm his consigliere,"
he corrects, as if I have any idea what that means.
"Angelo and I grew up together. We're best friends, and I'm his advisor."
I blink, attempting to wrap my head around that.
"But I take contracts for him as well. I don't have to, but I enjoy it."
My mouth parts, and my eyebrows fly up my forehead. "You enjoy murdering people," I repeat incredulously.
"Yes."
"Yes," I echo, laughing breathlessly as I turn away from him. I can't breathe with him so close, can't think properly. My phantom is a murderer. Not only that, but he also likes it. Funny how I was just berating John for getting involved with the mafia, and here this man is, boldly telling me he chooses to kill for them. Not even a lick of remorse in his tone either. I turn toward him again, my eyes narrowed. That deep, unsettled feeling still swirls in the pit of my stomach, questioning John's story. And if Rinaldo can so boldly tell me how he enjoys murdering people, then surely he will tell me about my husband, too. Tell me the truth. Does John work for him, too?
Yes.
That one syllable cracks what was left of my heart into pieces, and I hate that he confirmed my suspicions. I close my eyes, attempting to get a handle on my emotions. I had a terrible feeling John was lying to me, but I had hoped it was only my paranoia. It's not disbelief that sends pain flaring through my chest. It's only sorrow that my husband did exactly what I expected of him. And somehow, that hurts worse. He told me he was the victim, yet all along, he was the perpetrator. Why am I not surprised? I whisper to myself. Inhaling deeply, I open my eyes, needing to hear the truth. Tell me everything. How did John get involved with Angelo? Rinaldo quickly tells me the story, the real story. John's gambling with the Salvatores and owing them money. John continuously unable to pay. Angelo growing impatient with my husband and finally kidnapping him, intent on making him pay with his life. And then Rinaldo's saving him, asking Angelo to allow John to work off his dues as their accountant instead. It makes me sick hearing what truly happened, that it was John's gambling that got him involved with the goddamn mafia, and that it was Rinaldo who ensured Sarah and I wouldn't be homeless, not my own damn husband. There's no question whether I believe Rinaldo. While he'd omitted who he was working for before, he has never lied to me. Truthfully, this explanation makes far more sense than John's contrived story. I'm staring at him numbly, attempting to process everything I've just learned. But instead of dwelling on my husband's lies, I decide to focus on the man before me now. The man who isn't shying away from his involvement with the Salvatores. The man who confessed he murders people.
"Genevieve,"
he calls quietly. "Am I in danger with you, Rinaldo?" I ask softly. "Should I be screaming for my life right now?"
"Yes."
I'm baffled by his response, though I don't even know why. Rinaldo has never shied away from telling me what I don't want to hear. He prowls toward me, backing me into the wall behind me, and pinning his hands on either side of my head.
"I've always been a danger to you, Mia Rosa. You've never been safe from me."
What does that even mean? I ask breathlessly. His lips dip closer to my own, his breath warming them as he speaks.
Did you think I was lying when I said there are things I want to do to you that would make you want to run away? And I told you that if you try, I wouldn't let you. I still mean that, my love.
His voice is incredibly deep and dark, and it stirs the butterflies in my stomach. You've lost your mind, I breathe.
Since the moment I saw you,
he confirms. If I run away, you can't stop me, I challenge. I'm uncertain I want to run away, but there's a part of me that wants to try, only to see what would happen. It's reckless to provoke a man who just told me about his affinity for murdering people. Yet I know deep in my bones that Ronaldo would never truly hurt me. Not like John has.
You're right,
he murmurs, cocking his head thoughtfully.
But I can certainly catch you.
The air between us buzzes with static energy, making it incredibly hard to breathe, to think straight. My chest pumps as we stare at one another for a beat, the two of us waiting for the other to make a move. To hell with it. I dart to the side, but he's prepared. I barely make it an inch before his hand is cupping the underside of my jaw and slamming me back into the wall before him. I gasp, and it's the last breath I'm allowed before his mouth crushes mine. His tongue pries my lips apart, diving in and curling against the roof of my mouth. I lash my tongue against his and grip the lapels of his suit, pouring all my pent-up frustration into the kiss. He releases my throat and grabs at the bottom of my dress, lifting the heaps of fabric until both of his hands are beneath it and pawing at my girdle. He pauses when he discovers that it's crotchless, and I wear no underwear beneath it. When he pulls away, I shrug choppily. It's hard enough to use the restroom in this dress. I didn't need added complications. Growling, he grasps my hips and forces me to turn around, roughly slamming my chest into the marble wall. Then he kicks at my feet.
Spread them,
he demands roughly, his voice nearly unrecognizable. We can't do this here, I rush out, though I don't move an inch as he quickly unfastens his belt and the front of his trousers.
Who's gonna stop me?
He fires back. He grabs my hips and instinctively I arch my back.
You?
The question is dripping with condescension, and I'm tempted to smack him for it. Only if you don't hurry. He's slamming inside me before I can finish, and a sharp squeal replaces the rest of my words.
Shh, Mia Rosa. Someone may hear you.
He whispers darkly in my ear.
What would they think, knowing your husband is still out there?
He's retreating and slamming into me again before I can formulate a response. My mouth drops, and my brow furrows as he finds a quick, rough pace. The pleasure rises from between my legs, stealing my breath.
They might think you're being fucked,
he continues, his tone wicked.
And I'd be happy to show them just how much of a slut you are for me.
I'm forced to clamp my bottom lip between my teeth, biting down hard. It's nearly impossible to keep quiet, but somehow I manage as he drives into me with vigor. One hand glides over my hip and down my stomach, finding my clit and rubbing tight circles over it. His fingers slip from the wetness gathered there, though it doesn't make it any less pleasurable. If anything, the proof of how deeply he affects me only heightens the bliss. My eyes roll, a silent scream on my tongue, forcing my jaw to unhinge.
Don't you dare make a sound.
He growls, keeping his voice quiet, yet the smallest moan leaks past his lips, unable to follow his own orders.
Don't think I won't kill every goddamn person in this house to save you from shame. Their blood would be on your hands, all because you can't keep fucking quiet and take my cock like a good girl.
I'm barreling toward an orgasm so quickly, I'm unable to process it. His fingers stop their ministrations between my legs, only to deliver a sharp slap. He anticipates the inevitable noise that bursts from my lips and covers my mouth with his other hand. One more slap and I'm erupting. My knees weaken as the surge of pleasure sends me spiraling into outer space. His hand clamps tighter over my mouth, muffling the screams that demand to be let loose, no matter how hard I try to keep quiet. I'm somewhere else entirely when another low growl unleashes from Ronaldo's throat, and he trembles violently, pumping his release inside me. He rests his head on the back of my shoulder while his hands fall away from me. I'm panting heavily, delirious, and slowly coming down. My body trembles from the aftershocks still firing off inside me, and it's a wonder my knees still hold me upright. Slowly, he pulls away from me entirely.
Hold your dress up, baby.
I keep my eyes closed, resting my forehead on the cool tile while I attempt to process what the hell just happened. The water tap turns on, then off. Then there's a warm press of a towel between my legs as he cleans me up. When he's finished, he helps me straighten out my dress, attempting to free it from wrinkles. Afterward, we both tidy up our faces. I reapply my red lipstick while he cleans his face of it. I powder my nose and swipe the black from beneath my eyes. We both straighten out our hair, attempting to put everything back the way it was before he fucked me in the powder room. When the two of us are done, he grabs me by my nape and tugs me into him roughly, drawing a gasp from my lips.
My cum will leak down your thighs while you're dancing with your husband. If you dare to wipe it away, I'll expose you in front of everyone and make him swallow it.
He threatens, his tone unyielding and savage. My mouth drops, and I can only stare at him with shock.
I'll leave first. Wait a couple minutes.
Blinking, I expect him to turn and go. Instead, he places a soft kiss against my lips, barely a whisper of his flesh against mine.
Don't test me, Genevieve. I will be watching.
He whispers. Another soft kiss.
I love you.
And he's gone, just like the phantom he's known to be. September 22nd, 1944. I cannot believe what I discovered today. What has my life become? I'm at a loss for words. John doesn't know that I know who he's working for now, and truthfully, I don't even know what to say. It's the only thing that is currently keeping us from losing our house and casting our daughter into the streets. It's keeping John alive so Sarah doesn't lose a father. But that doesn't make it any easier of a pill to swallow. And Ronaldo, I can't help but feel a little lied to, though I know it's not fair. He made it clear that his boss was dangerous, but I wish he'd just still told me. I don't know how to feel about any of this. I'm so incredibly conflicted. Is it terrible that this doesn't make me want to stop seeing him? It should. He said he's killed before and will continue to do so. That alone should have me running far away. Yet, I still want to stay. Chapter 26, The Raven. November 18th, 1944.
What are you going to do while I'm gone?
John asks, hovering around the kitchen island while I prepare Sarah's breakfast. An anxious energy radiates from his pores, and it's making my skin itch. He and Frank are leaving for a fishing trip this morning, and they plan to be out until late tonight. With winter approaching, today is a rare day of no rain, so they've decided to take advantage of the weather. A plan that seems to set John on edge. Everything has changed between us, and while the two of us try our best to make Sarah's home life as normal as possible, there's a noticeable shift. I don't let him kiss me anymore. A decade ago, we would slow dance by the radio while little Sarah would cling to our legs. Even 5 years ago, we'd sneak away for time alone or giggle and tease each other. Admittedly, it's been years, but at the very least, we touched one another. Now I shift away from even the smallest touch, always keeping a wall between us. We coexist. While affection for Sarah has never waned, not even for a second, it's gone extinct between John and me. I'm okay with that. However, my husband is not. He tries to reconnect with me, to reignite the flame between us. I wouldn't dare say John and I weren't happy at one point, but that flame has always burned low. I'm not a silly little girl, seeking a connection with a man and expecting it to always be fireworks and explosions. It's inevitable for relationships to become boring and monotonous as life goes on, and I've no qualms settling into a life of comfort with my other half. But that's not what John and I have. We've always gotten along just fine, if only to sit in comfortable silence with one another, though I have never truly desired John's presence. I don't recall the last time I was overcome with happiness, or even a time where I craved him in any capacity. I felt those things sporadically, of course, but never wholly. It's become apparent that John and I were young and weighed down beneath the pressure of societal expectations. We were two kids dumb enough to think we were in love. Then we were friends, then parents, and now we're strangers. I've settled in my discontent, and for years I constructed some semblance of happiness, first for my Sarah's comfort, then for my own. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter anymore. John spiraled, and as a result, he hurt me in ways I cannot come back from. If he left tomorrow, I wouldn't miss him. Sarah and I are going to catch a film around lunchtime. Then she's going to Brenda's for her birthday party and sleepover. I answer, keeping my tone pleasant.
And after?
He pushes.
What will you do when she leaves?
I will stare out at the trees and write in my journal. I say evenly. An unnecessary dig, but that comment of his hit a nerve. Since that fight when he claimed I do nothing more than write in my diary, he still hasn't shown appreciation for how I've always taken care of him and our daughter. My husband is determined to win back my love, but he thinks he'll accomplish that by calling me beautiful or complimenting my dress. One night, he brought home a bouquet of tulips, and when I asked him why, he said he remembered they were my favorite. I didn't bother correcting him. During the summer, I place vases of poppies in various parts of the house, keeping them alive for days on end. The flowers fill the front yard, too, and I held a poppy bouquet when I married him. He had one pinned to his suit, for God's sake. Poppies are my favorite. Or rather, they used to be. Lately, I've been favoring roses.
Gigi.
He sighs. When I give him my full attention, he seems to struggle for his next words. Sarah comes barreling into the kitchen a moment later, slicing the building tension and effectively ending the conversation. Just in time, I chirp, turning to grab Sarah's plate, which is piled with a waffle, covered in butter, syrup, and a small heap of blueberries.
I hear you're seeing a film today, Princess.
John says, tugging on Sarah's ear affectionately.
What are you seeing?
That new musical comedy that came out earlier this month, Something for the Boys.
She takes a huge bite of her waffle, then swings her upper body side to side in a little happy dance. She's always been prone to dancing while she eats, and it never fails to make me smile. John lifts his gaze to mine, where lingering questions still swirl within. I sigh and give in, hoping it will mean he doesn't stress and rush home. It's sad to say, but I'm looking forward to his leaving for the day. I have a stack of books waiting to be read and a bottle of wine waiting to be drunk, I say softly. Those are the only plans I have. It's concerning how easy it's become to lie to my husband, yet I can't find it in me to feel an ounce of regret. Shame, maybe. Though even that has waned. His shoulders relax and he nods. Relieved, I turn around to clean up. The front door opens and slams shut a moment later, signaling Frank's arrival. I peer over my shoulder just as he appears.
Ready to catch some fish, Johnny boy?
Frank calls as he saunters into the kitchen, a wide smile on his face. It's rare to see him in something other than a nice suit, since his job as a detective requires him to present himself a certain way. Today, he and John both wear simple trousers with suspenders, polo shirts beneath their thick jackets, and Panama hats. They appear to be law-abiding citizens, but ever since they brought me to Angelo's, I know better now. John is involved with the mafia, and I have an unsettling suspicion that his best friend is too.
Always.
John returns with a forced grin while Frank ruffles Sarah's hair, causing her to swat at him playfully with a waffle-filled giggle. Frank raises his hand, holding up a case of Rainier.
Thought we'd get some cold beers in our system today.
John's smile drops an inch, and the two men's gazes swing toward me. Frank is aware that alcohol has become a sore spot in the Parsons household, yet he brings it anyway. I cast him an unimpressed look, and though he has the decency to appear ashamed, it does little to ease my frustration with him. Before, I wouldn't have thought twice about John's drinking beer. Now I wonder how drunk he's going to come home, and what will happen if he does. If Frank truly cared about his best friend's drinking habit, he wouldn't have brought the beer. Yet it's tradition, and I certainly don't believe John has confessed to Frank all the terrible mistakes he's made while sauced. Maybe if Frank knew, he'd be more diligent. However, it would be inappropriate for me to tell him such intimate matters about our marriage. Still, I won't cause any more unnecessary tension. If he does come home drunk, I will just have to deal with it then. Saying nothing, I refocus on piling the dirty dishes into the sink. Frank breaks the bout of silence, forcing heartiness in his tone.
You ready, Johnny? Let's skedaddle. The fish are just begging for some good bait today. I can hear them all the way from over here.
I keep still as John approaches from behind, grabbing my arms and leaning in to place a chaste kiss on my cheek. A year ago, I would have met that kiss with my lips. Now, I keep my stare pinned to the dishes and wave them off without turning around. You boys have fun, but not too much, I say merrily.
Yes, ma'am.
John says quietly as he retreats. They're out the door a few minutes later, and relief washes over me. Turning around to Sarah, I paste a smile on my face. Finish up those waffles, pretty girl. We have a film to catch, and you still need a bath. You have syrup in your hair. She shrugs haughtily, as if wearing syrup in her hair is a fashion statement that I'm too old and decrepit to know. I don't need a bath. I'll just smell extra sweet. So sweet, you'll make all the bees come out, I retort. Her eyes widen comically. She's always hated bees. A bath it is.
Chapter 27, The Phantom, November 18th, 1944. Would you ever let me read your diary? I didn't intend to ask such an invasive question, but curiosity got the best of me. I lean against the doorframe to the living room, watching her as she scribbles in the leather-bound book. It's mid-afternoon, and Sarah left only 10 minutes ago. I didn't waste time coming inside once she had gone, and Genevieve has been studiously ignoring me since. Or rather, trying to. A wicked little smile has been playing on her lips since my arrival. I've tucked my hands in my pockets, forcing myself to stay put, despite how my fingers continuously twitch with the need to touch her. Genevieve peeks up at me, a coquettish, you-know-better expression on her beautiful face.
Then you would be privy to all my deepest, darkest desires, Mr. Capello.
She teases.
You might find me boring if you knew everything about me.
I raise a brow and smirk. I don't believe that's possible, my love. I suspect that I'll only grow more fascinated by you. She hums and leans back into the rocking chair, staring at me thoughtfully. sustaining her impish look. Then she lifts her journal before her face, only allowing me to see her sparkling blue eyes. Mischievousness sparks within them as she flips a page before her sensual voice rings out.
November 17th, 1944.
She recites, flicking her stare toward me for the briefest of seconds.
Ronaldo said he'd visit me tomorrow, and it's all I can think about. I wonder if he'll touch me again, or use his tongue in all his favorite places.
She holds my gaze as she says the next sentence, though appetency swirls within hers.
They are also my favorite places.
My hands in my pockets curl into tight fists as she continues and effectively ignores the way my stare bores into her.
Though I can't help but wonder if he'd like my tongue on him, too. I've thought about it many times over the months, even dreamed about it. But I've never done something like that before, so today I decided to practice. I never thought I'd live to see a day where I'm stuffing a banana down the back of my throat, but...
My mind goes blank, and my vision blurs as I rush to her. I'm across the room in mere seconds. She yelps when I rip the journal from her grasp, sending it flying with one hand and fisting her curls with the other. I'm pulling her to her feet 1 second, and the next I'm devouring those filthy red lips. Never in my 36 years did I think a woman's putting a piece of fruit down her throat would threaten to send me to my knees. Yet the image of her doing so just to please me has me spiraling. If you wanted to practice, baby, I'm happy to oblige. I growl against her abused mouth, my chest filling with fire. My cock is already straining against my trousers, and it throbs painfully from the knowledge that she wants to wrap those pretty lips around it.
What if I'm terrible at it?
She asks breathlessly. Clutching her curls tighter, I yank her head back, evoking a little yelp from her throat. I'm helpless to control myself and be gentle with her. You are incapable of doing anything wrong, Genevieve. If wrapping your lips around my cock meant suffering, I'd spend the rest of my days at your mercy. She peers up at me through her eyelashes coyly.
Then it's fortunate that I only aim to please you.
She plants her hands on my chest and pushes away from me, and I let her go, watching her closely as she backs a few feet away. Her green floral dress cuts into a deep V-neck, dainty buttons trailing down the length of it and holding the fabric tight to her curves. She toys with the top button, right below a hint of cleavage. My mouth waters as she plucks it free, then the next, and onward until the top half of the dress is parted, exposing her silky brassiere. Instead of removing the dress completely, she slides her arms free of the three-quarter sleeves, allowing the material to droop to her waist. Next, she reaches behind her and unhooks the bra, letting it fall to the floor. My God, I'll never tire of the sight of her. Full breasts that are more than a handful and have gone unappreciated for far too long. I've licked and sucked those rosy pink nipples any chance I could get over the past few months, yet it never seems enough. A conundrum I can't seem to escape, despite how often I ravish her body. I always need more. She points to her rocking chair.
Would you sit for me?
She asks sweetly, and I'm tempted to bite her just for playing innocent. She is innocent, in some ways. Her mouth and her plump backside that is begging to be explored, but she certainly has expressed no desire to stay that way, and I have no plans to allow her to. I grin, licking my bottom lip slowly before biting down on it as I pass her, causing those red lips to part in anticipation. I make no effort to hide the animalistic hunger gnawing at the inside of my chest. I want her to see me for the predator that I am, and I want her to feel like every bit of the prey that she is. First, I move the stool out of the way, allowing her ample space to kneel. Then I adopt a casual posture and sit in her chair, leaning back and keeping my legs spread, my elbows perched on the armrests. She stands several feet away, and when she goes to take a step, I hold up a palm, stopping her. Her eyes flare wide, but I don't allow embarrassment to settle in. I nod at her. Kneel, right there. Her brows knit in confusion, and she hesitates for only a moment before dropping to her knees. The pale skin of her chest is flushing red, and the color slowly works its way up her throat. She's becoming nervous, though she tries to hide it. Genevieve is a confident woman, yet all it takes is one look from me for her to squirm beneath my stare. Now, crawl to me, Mia Rosa. She swallows thickly, and I see the decision settle over her gaze as she turns from unsure of herself to a powerful vixen in a matter of seconds. She may act beneath my command, but she knows it is I who am beholden to her. Licking her lips, she stares at me with a seductive look, her blue eyes bright beneath her thick black eyelashes, her straight white teeth toying with her bottom lip. A goddamn goddess she is, derived directly from the myths carved into ancient ruins. I'm enraptured by her as she gets on her hands and slowly crawls to me, her hips and beautiful tits swaying seductively. A growl works its way out of my throat before I can stop it. I've seen many beautiful sights in my years, but nothing could even begin to compare to Genevieve Parsons crawling on her hands and knees for me. By the time she reaches me, my hands are clenched around the armrests, and I'm 2 seconds from exploding. Decades of experience to build my stamina as a man, and one woman is threatening to revert me to a prepubescent boy. I keep silent as she reaches for my belt, sucking on her bottom lip in anticipation. There's a slight tremor in her hands as she unbuckles the leather, though her fingers are deft. She has my trousers unfastened in seconds, and by the time she releases my cock from the slit in my briefs, it's painfully hard and throbbing in her small hand. A hint of nervousness rears its head again, and she glances up at me.
You'll tell me what you like?
Anything, I rasp, the word damn near breaking apart at the syllables. I'll love anything you do to me. My assurance, or maybe how I'm so clearly unraveling, is all she requires to gather her confidence. Keeping her blue eyes pinned to me, she leans forward and wraps her lips around the tip of my cock. I hiss between my teeth, and she studies me closely as her tongue darts out and licks the bead of precum. It's not her experience with men that keeps her gaze locked on mine. Most women know that's any man's undoing. She does so because she strives to satisfy me, and she's devoted to watching my every expression to ensure she does just that. The damn woman has no idea that her eye contact alone is more than enough to send me over the edge. She reaches her hand up and wraps it around my length, and I'm immediately sitting up. Nope. You're gonna make me come before I get a chance to enjoy it. Put your damn hands behind your back, I demand roughly. She pulls away, blinking in confusion, though she still obeys. I rip my belt from the loops and then lean forward, wrapping the leather around her wrists and tying them together tightly. When I lean back, there's an amused smile playing on her lips,
I'm only to use my mouth?
Yes. I all but snarl. I've never been this uncontrolled, and I'm damn near terrified I'll come after mere moments, robbing us both of an incredible experience. If I knew this was going to happen today, I'd have taken care of myself beforehand, if only to save myself from utter embarrassment.
Okay,
she says simply.
Am I allowed to continue?
I thin my eyes. You have 2 seconds, Genevieve. She perks up and doesn't dare waste another instant. My eyes shudder the moment her wet heat is engulfing the tip of my cock again, this time venturing further down my length. I don't expect her to take all of me, so I let her test her own limits for now. I have every intention of pushing her, but only after she's accustomed to the feel of me sliding in and out of her throat. She takes her time exploring my length with her tongue, almost curiously at first, as if she's tasting a new cuisine for the first time. Then she grows bolder and licks me with more sureness. All the while, we watch each other, entirely riveted by one another's expressions. As her confidence grows, her cheeks hollow. The first time she truly sucks on my cock, a moan spills from my lips. Her blue eyes flare from the sound, and determination settles in her gaze. It's the moment I know I'm done for. And she proves me right. With eagerness, she sucks me harder, bobbing her head up and down as she does, and flattening her tongue against the underside of my cock. She's intent on pulling more of those sounds out of me, and I yearn to please her, so I loosen my restraint and let her hear just how feral she makes me. God, baby, you suck me so pretty, I whimper, losing my mind over the red lipstick smeared down my length. Soon, her lips will be wiped clean of it, and I'd be happy to use my cock to reapply it. Invigorated, she moans around me and bobs her head earnestly, swallowing as much as she can until she gags, evoking another grunt from my lips. Such a good girl, I whisper. What would your husband think of seeing you like this, gagging on my cock? She flicks a glare at me, and I grin in return, my eyelids drooping. He'd be devastated, watching his innocent wife choking me down like a little slut. Now she keeps her watery blue eyes pinned to me again, fire raging within, though she doesn't dare retreat. Instead, she sucks me harder, evoking a groan. It would torture him, wouldn't it, baby, knowing that he will never fill your throat like I do. I manage a chuckle, the sound distorted with pleasure. He can't even fill your cunt like I can. A lone tear tracks down her cheek, muddled with eyeliner. I smear it across her skin with my thumb, biting back another grin. Don't worry, Mia Rosa. I'll make him watch while I fuck you like you deserve, then I'll cut off his hands and cock so he can never touch you again. I snarl, overcome with the thought. Then I whisper, poor Johnny boy, bleeding out on the floor while I make his wife scream my name. She makes a high-pitched sound, her cheeks flushed and her eyes fiery, but I know her pussy is dripping wet. She pretends to be affronted by the words, yet she swallows me down until she gags again, and it takes effort to keep my eyes from rolling. Fuck, Genevieve. Keep sucking it like that. You're doing so good. Eagerly, she obliges, swallowing me down until she gags once more. My balls tighten, and I continue to moan and mutter encouragements, words tumbling from my mouth that I hardly understand. Each time, she seems to become more desperate for the next one. So fucking proud of you. Swallow it deeper. Please, baby, I need it. Fuck, that's it. That's a good girl. Oh, just like that,
Please don't stop sucking it.
The pleasure she elicits is astronomical, and it takes every bit of concentration to keep from exploding in her mouth. I'm too goddamn enraptured to let it be over yet, especially because I have so much more in store for her. Deciding that she's practiced enough, I curl a hand into her hair and pull tight. She pauses, yet it's pointless because I'm shoving her head down, her lipstick staining my cock. A little squeal resounds against me, but I pay it no mind. With her hands tied, she's unable to stop me as I lift her head until the tip pops free, a trail of saliva connecting from her lips to my head. Her eyes are rounded at the corner, and her tongue is hanging past her lips while she pants heavily. I mourn that I'm unable to take a photograph of her like that. I'd never let go of it, carrying it around with me for my eyes only. And when my day came, I'd ensure it was the last thing I saw before I took my final breath. I see no way through this life without her. Obsession, addiction, love, they are meager words to describe what I feel for her. Such a pretty whore for me, Mia Rosa, I growl.
If I were your whore,
she whispers,
you'd fuck my mouth like one.
I lose it. She dares tempt a beast, and I'm happy for her to suffer those consequences. I'm shoving her down on my cock instantly, and she's ready for me, swallowing me down with ease. I pump my hips into her mouth, guiding her head as I do, until she receives exactly what she asked for. I fuck her mouth. Unintelligible sounds pour from my throat as I come undone, spitting out words through clenched teeth. That's it, baby. That's how you suck my fucking cock. Such a desperate little slut for me, aren't you? You fucking love choking on it, don't you? Still, I've no idea what I'm saying, and maybe later realization will settle in and I'll be ashamed of the way I spoke to her. Right now, I'm out of my damn mind, and I couldn't care less about what spills past my lips. Euphoria has my stomach clenching and balls constricting. I feel my length swelling in her mouth, causing her to gag as I hold her head down, entirely lost as the pleasure comes to claim me like a reaper who witnessed my last breath. Yes, yes, make me come, baby. Make me fucking come. She gags, and I erupt so forcefully that I sit upright, cradling her head against me as I'm consumed. Distinctly, I feel a shout burst past my lips as I flood her throat, followed by uncontrollable moans and whimpers as I mindlessly rut into her mouth. The ecstasy is too much, too strong, causing me to bite my goddamn tongue as I'm swept beneath the tidal wave. Colors detonate in my vision, and my cock feels as if it's literally going to explode from the pressure. It's intense and breathtaking, and fuck is it violent. Soon enough, it eases, then becomes too sensitive. I pull her head back, needing some type of relief from the sensation. I'm getting too old to experience something like that, and for a moment, I'm convinced I'm on the verge of having a stroke. My chest is tight, and I can't inhale a single breath. However, after a few more moments, the constriction around my chest eases and my lungs loosen. Tremors rack my body as I slump back into the chair, a hand over my mouth as I stare at her in utter shock. All the while, she stares at me.